Every year, East Coast Radio hosts the East Coast Radio Business Breakfast. 2024, it is the Mancosa East Coast Radio Business Breakfast. And at this business breakfast, we have some of the best keynote speakers the continent has to offer, some of the most inspirational and some of the most ingenious speakers from across South Africa and sometimes across the globe. This year, we have Vusi Tembokwaya, John Sane, Leanne Manas, and Miles Kubeka. An awesome lineup, and obviously we sold out really, really quickly. However, if you weren't able to get tickets to this year's Mancosa East Coast Radio Business Breakfast, here is a taste of each of our speakers. John Sane, multi number one best-selling author, John Sane. You know what? Your name, John Sane, and futurism go hand in hand when you do a Google search. So I've heard some people say to me, no, he's a futures specialist, not a futurist. What do we need to, how are we wording this? How can we word this better?
I think it's really all the same. I think we're all futurists. Why I changed the title to futures strategist was really to put a plural on future and ultimately to try and get people to understand that there isn't one future we're moving towards. Stop getting caught up in news cycles and crises. And when you think of future as a singular, you feel trapped and a victim. When you see future as a plural, you understand that there's many options for us to move towards.
That small differentiation is a game changer, actually.
It's a huge game changer because it empowers you to realize that doesn't matter what's going on in the world, some people are super successful, and doesn't matter what's going on in the world, some people are never successful. And those people will always blame, shame, and actually what it is, it's a neuroscience patterning that's happened to us that we become addicted to familiarity, even if that familiarity is terrible. We become addicted to lives we don't like. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get people to realize the incredible power of choice that you have if you understand the mechanics of the brain and if you understand the mechanics of the future. And that combination has seen me now travel the world and tell these stories around what it means to understand it holistically.
You do, in your books, communicate it in a way that's a lot less woo-woo. I know that manifestation was like a woo-woo thing from first spotted on Oprah.
But yes, that's true.
But you do explain it in a way of like in this simple differentiation that the future isn't set. There are multiple futures. And the things you do now are to create that one future that you aspire to, which is, I think that's the nice differentiator.
Yeah, look, I think also I speak for governments and organizations. If I get too woo-woo, people switch off. And you can't be woo-woo in a world of business. What you've got to do is make it as practical as possible. And look, at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that are in the woo-woo world that are anti-money in some way. And I'm very much pro-money. But really, the point that I'm trying to make is make as much money as you can and share it widely and have fun doing it. But understand that the story that you're telling yourself around abundance, about money, about the future is just a story. And if you can understand that it's just a story, then you can realize you can change the story. And one of the things that I always urge my audiences to do is think about how you think. Because if you think about how you think, you get an opportunity to rewrite the software. And I give you all the tools in my talks and my books around how to literally go about doing that.
It's invaluable advice. And that's why we're so excited to hear you speak at the Business Breakfast and why I encourage people to read your books. So to anyone listening right now who is in a business or is actually in a business doing pretty well and might actually be employing some people, which is first prize, do you have any tips for identifying people who will embrace the change necessary for moving your way towards the future?
Well, let's just remember that what has happened to our brains, fortunately or unfortunately, is that over the last 200 years, we've been educated in a way that gets us to be focused on linear futures. And what I mean by this is when you go to school, it's about fitting into a system. When you finish school, you go to university, which means that you're in the system that's all about replication, familiarity, efficiencies, and profitability to an existing system. It's called economies of scale. We've all been programmed for this. And so we've almost got this underlying addiction to certainty and stability without us even realizing it. But what the future requires is exactly the opposite. It requires adaptability. It requires multiversal thinking, not university thinking. And so the people that are going to become much more worthy of having their own businesses and having great jobs are generalists, because what generalists are able to do is jump between topics and have an ability to unlearn, to relearn on a major amount of topics. And, you know, I failed school. I was expelled twice. And when people from school hear that I've become an academic and now teach at universities, they kind of bamboozled, just like my mom is and just like I am, to be honest, because I really was terrible at fitting into a system. I hated the system. And you realize that school was only really made for about 20 to 25% of the human population. The rest of us had to squeeze ourselves into this ridiculous notion of how important those certain subjects were and how unimportant public speaking was, or art was, or fashion was. But if you did maths and English and science, then you were really highly regarded, which was exactly the opposite of the way my brain worked. So you can see that the system we come from is already an unfair system. What's going to happen as we move into the future, and the types of people that you need are obviously not just one type. You still need the people that can fit into the system, because you still need efficiencies brought to your existing system. But really, the CEOs of the future are not accountants anymore. The CEOs of the future are the ones that are able to deal with uncertainty with optimism. And that is an emotional skill, not an intellectual skill.
So if you have a tip then to nurture people who need to unlearn these bad habits that have been instilled in us from school, from university, from society, from your previous workplaces. Just a couple of tips.
One, please look for people that have got high emotional intelligence. Because if you've got low emotional intelligence, you aren't able to deal with uncertainty. In fact, the best question we can ask ourselves is, what is emotional intelligence? And the best answer is, how quickly does it take you to recover from a trigger? When you are triggered, you are not expansive, you're not fascinated, you're not curious about the future. And so in order for you to really start to find people that are curious about the future, they need high levels of EQ. The number one tip I have for yourself individually to actually deal with the future in a more curious way, because it is so scary and because it is so uncertain, is you've got to deal with your trauma. You've got to deal with whatever's hooking you to the past. And we can see this because the most triggered person in TV right now or in the news is Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's payoff line is, let's make America great
again.
Not let's move into the future. Let's move into the past, where I'm protective of the way I think and I feel. And in South Africa, unfortunately, what we've done is we've developed an identity based on the past, not on the future. And this is not just in South Africa. There's places around the world that have got this exact same ideology, is that we are more about our past than we are about our future. And we've got to be able to hire people and work with people that are much more focused on the future than their memories. Dr. Joe Dispenza, one of my teachers, has a great line. He says, are you living a life based on a set of memories of your past, or are you living a life based on the vision of your future? And most people are in memory repetition.
Yeah. Okay. So if I'm in a business and I'm looking for staff or a workforce with higher EQ. So we're looking for EQ, not IQ. How do you test for that? How do you interview for that?
Well, the best way to do is to have high EQ yourself, and then it's obvious.
Okay.
If you don't have high EQ yourself, you can't see it.
I feel the force.
Yeah, exactly. And you only see what you're capable of engaging with. You know what I mean? And if you can't see it, you don't have the right EQ. And you know that line that says, you are the sum total of the five people you hang around with. And then what people do is they try and get themselves invited to higher circles so that they can be influenced. And my response to that is, that's dumb. What you should do is become the people that you want to be hanging around with. And in that order, you'll be invited into their circles. And so that takes a lot of self-development, self-introspection, for you to develop the high levels of EQ. And what actually, which is so weird, what really starts to happen is they start coming towards you. Yeah. You don't actually go towards them. They start finding you because they're desperate for working with somebody with high EQ.
I know that you probably stay right the way away from generalizations, but is there a kernel of truth in the assumptions that certain generations do? You can make assumptions about them. For example, the Gen Z, I've noticed Gen Zs are very different from millennials. And again, at the risk of generalizing, a millennial at work would need perhaps some mollycoddling. There's a sense of entitlement that exists there that Gen Zs seem to be much more of a problem solver. Keep the peace. I've seen this. They have a sense that they've seen this movie and they want to fix it. Then you got the Gen Xers who were the generation who could bump their head and ride the BMX at night, you know, home from school, who have less fear, say, than millennials and Gen Zs. Is it okay to make these generalizations?
Look, I think there's a lot of research that goes into the fact that what creates generations are their parents in many ways and the economic situation they're brought up in. So you become a product of your environment without really even trying. So, you know, the millennials were mollycoddled by Gen Xers that realized that their parents were terrible parents.
They didn't love us.
You know, and no, but you know what? I often remark that our parents ran iOS 1.
Yeah.
They just didn't have the software to understand that beating you and, you know, these things were not good long term. You know,
no.
they were not good. But our poor parents didn't know better because they got even beat worse than us. So what happened to us is I'm a Gen X. I imagine you are as well.
Yeah.
But what happened to us is we got the internet and all of a sudden we started to realize, hang on a second. We need to be much nicer to our kids. So we overdid it. Mm. So what did we do? We created a whole range of people that are feeling a little bit entitled because of the way our parents treated us. So we wanted to reverse that. And I think what's happening with the Gen Zs is that now what we've done is realize that that was maybe too far. The pendulum swung a bit too far. And what we need to do is actually readjust. And I think the Gen Zs have a different experience of being parented differently. Mm. The intelligence that's been shared online has changed to a certain extent. So, yes, I think there is a opportunity to generalize it. Obviously, there's always uniqueness within these scenarios, but generational archetypes are a real thing. And it's not just because of their age, but remember, it's because of the information they have and the way they've been parented. And that's really our fault in many ways. And, you know, we often think that there's far too many mommy's boys in the world, and there are far too many mommy's boys in the world. And if you think about what mommy's boys are, they usually come from a Jewish, Italian, Greek, Middle Eastern, Indian culture. They don't really come from the Scandinavian, American, and English cultures. They really come from these other cultures. And if you think what's the difference between these cultures is the mothering. The mothering of an Italian, a Greek, an Indian, a Jewish, a Middle Eastern. I'm a Middle Eastern. I know. Your mother does everything for you. And what happens is you grow up literally being a mommy's boy. And then you expect the rest of the world to do what your mom did.
Yeah.
And you realize it's actually a cultural phenomenon, not actually a generational one.